Welcome to the Old Time Dragnet program. This is your host, Adam Graham. I'm hoping all of our listeners had a very Merry Christmas if they celebrated that. We got some emails, so I'll go ahead and get right into them. Email from Ephraim: I just discovered your podcast and I just want to say thank you. Well, thank you for listening, Ephraim. It's much appreciated. Another email, this comes from Andrew, who writes: thank you so much for your comments following your most recent episode of the Old Time Radio Dragnet Show. I've got to say, I can't really argue with the report of this job, being a police officer. And of course, 2 weeks ago when I did the program, I actually talked about a news story in U.S. News and World Report suggesting that a police officer was an overrated job in terms of glamour. He says, and I very much agree with your observation that TV and film portrayed in most cases as something that is not, which is action-packed. In my experience, the action-packed moments, even at their most exciting points, still consist of dealing with people who are not in top form and seeing firsthand the depravity of mankind is never fun or pleasant, no matter the size of the adrenaline dump. Truly, Jack Webb had a gift, which I would argue is as of yet unsurpassed in communicating the complexities of the law enforcement profession. The speech from the episode, The Interrogation, is a classic and says it all just like it is. Sure, there's probably a lot more fun and adventure, not to mention better funding and Homeland Security. But where does that leave all the other agencies? Police work is not a necessary evil, rather it is necessary due to the unpleasant reality that there is evil in the world. And evil must be confronted by men and women who are willing to stand and face it. Thank you so much for your support of law enforcement and for your dedicated work week in and week out in getting out this wonderful program. It is truly a highlight of my week, and I know for many others. Blessings to you, and have a Merry Christmas. Andrew D. Bow. And Bowell, excuse me. Thank you. From a police department out there, thank you so much for the email. Andrew, thank you so much. All right. Yeah, I should have just stuck with first names. If I do that, I won't get into trouble. Another email I got from Chris Thielson. Chris writes, the two recent episodes sound like they've been run through a digital chorus filter or stereo field emulator. As a fan of the podcast, please don't. It gives the sound a cheap, hollow feel that is especially apparent with a good pair of headphones and too distracting for listening. Well, thanks for the comment, Chris. A couple things. I'm not doing anything really different with the show than I have in the past couple of weeks than I have done before. Now, certainly when it comes to the quality of the episodes, one thing to understand is I don't do a lot of heavy-duty editing of these episodes. I'm not a sound editor, and because of that, there's just a very limited amount I can do. Thankfully, these are works in the public domain, and these have been found and restored and preserved by fans, but they're in varying conditions. Like today's episode, I'll warn you in advance, just so that nobody gets too annoyed, is there are a couple skips. And there's a few, like, little blips missing from a couple scenes in the episode. And I listened to that, and I kind of debated with myself, and I decided it was enough, so it's a little bit annoying. But it's not so much that you really don't know what happened. You know, if I get an episode and I just don't know what's happened in it, then I'm not going to use it. I'll just say, I'm sorry, the episode quality wasn't there. In this case, I actually went out to the internet and I searched around to see if I could find a higher quality version of the recording, and it simply wasn't there. So, yeah, the quality of the episode itself is something that's just, you know, that's just how it came to me. So, apologize if that wasn't the best quality, and I hope this one works out for everybody. All right, before I get started, I do want to let you know just briefly about the sponsorship, which is for Netflix. I actually had a Christmas gift request of what I didn't want for Christmas, and that is more DVDs. You know, when I first got out on my own, the DVD craze was out there, and it was like, oh, these cute DVD discs, and I would go and go, oh, there's one for $1, there's one for $2, you know, snap them up, and you just end up with so many DVD cases. Worse yet, these things drop in value like a rock. So, you know, if you're going to be moving or anything, it's going to be a nightmare to sell. And you're going to be carrying a lot of these around because the new ones depreciate so much. That's where Netflix comes in, and it's really handy, where you can basically get to enjoy a vast DVD library with all your favorites for a reasonable price, and you don't have to carry any inventory. You don't have to acquire any new DVDs. You can simply watch it and send it back when you're done. Because the only, you know, watch over and over again are, you know, Disney movies the kids want to watch. And those you can take care of in other ways. So I encourage everybody, if you're interested, to go to dragnetradio.blogspot.com. And of course, this has got on it, you can watch all four seasons of the 1960s Dragnet and all seven seasons of Adam 5. Available for direct view to your computer or to your television. And there are even more devices that you can get Netflix streaming on coming out in the next year. So I encourage everybody, if you don't have Netflix, feel free to try it out. Go to dragnetradio.blogspot.com and click on the Netflix link. And just encourage you to try it out. You got a 2-week free trial there. By the way, I've actually been watching a lot more of Adam 12 than I have Dragnet recently, just because I'm almost through the third season of Dragnet, and there's only one left, and I know I've seen some of the episodes, so I want to, you know, savor those a little bit. But the Adam 12 episodes, it's just so fascinating. I think, really, for the beep cop out there, really, it's kind of the peak of achievement. In some way, it's more realistic than some of the reality cop shows, because having watched some of these shows just a little bit, you get the sense that they focus on kind of the most sensational aspects of the job rather than the more realistic day-in, day-out stuff. So, been pretty interesting going through. We're into season four, like I said. We have some additional comments that have come to us via different internet sites, but before I go too much into that, let's go ahead and we'll get into today's episode, The Big Run. Again, as I said earlier, there'll be a little bit of a skip in this episode, but don't worry, you're not going to miss anything terribly important. Apologize in advance, but let's go ahead and get into The Big Run.
The story you are about to hear is true. Only the names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, brings you Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to accident investigation, hit and run detail. You receive a call that two elderly women have been struck down in a crosswalk by a hit and run driver. The women lie in Georgia Street Hospital. Their condition is critical. Your job? Find the driver.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Saturday, September 5th. It was mild in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of accident investigation, hit and run detail. My partner's Ben Romero. The boss is Benny Caldwell, chief of traffic. My name's Friday. It was 7:35 p.m. when I got to 4656 Collis Avenue. My front door.
Is that your Joseph?
Yeah, Ma. Got both Sunday papers.
Oh, good. nice music on the radio, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty. It's your favorite song, isn't it?
Yes. See you in my dreams. Every Saturday night we used to get together down at the old Cromwell House on West Adams Boulevard. Weekly dance, you know.
Yeah, I know.
It was a lovely old home down there. Had a beautiful ballroom upstairs. Always had a good time at the Cromwell House.
Was that before you were married?
Oh, my, yes. Met your father through Mildred Cromwell, you know. She was quite fond of him, too.
Is that so?
Yes, she was. Oh, nothing was serious, but she used to think quite a lot of Sam.
And you broke him up, huh?
Now, Joseph, you know I wouldn't do a thing like that. Millie was only mildly interested in Sam. I wouldn't come between two people that were happy. You know that.
Well, there's no way he used to tell it. Said you just broke him up, that's all.
Yes. Well. He ever tell you about the time all the girls invited some of the fellows from the Royal Order of the Western Wildlife Protective Brotherhood, Southern Charter, over to the basket raffle?
To a what?
Basket raffle. All the girls packed tasty lunches, and the boys bid for them at auction.
Oh, yeah.
It was a warm summer evening, just like tonight. It was a grand affair. Annie Shellman was there with Jim Donahoe, and your father came with Lorenzo Fisher, the grand vizier of the wildlifers.
Yeah, sounds like quite an evening.
Oh, it was, Joseph, it really was. Samuel bid the highest for my basket. $10.15. I'll always think to this day that's the reason Millie Cromwell's been so cool toward me.
Oh, yeah, could be. You want part of the examiner, Ma?
Oh, thank you, son. I want to finish turning this collar on your shirt.
Okay.
You wouldn't think a basket lunch could come between two good friends, would you?
A big fine? What's that?
You'd ever think a basket lunch should break up a friendship like Millie Cromwell's and mine?
Well, ma'am, you wouldn't. I'll get it, Ma. Friday talking.
This McDermott, Joe.
Oh, yeah, Mac.
Got a bad one. Two elderly women were struck by a hit front.
Well, just a minute, Mac. I can't. Hey, Ma, would you turn down the radio, please?
You are.
Thank you. Yeah, Mac, go ahead.
3 blocks west of Riverside on Los Feliz. We have 2 traffic cars out there now for the preliminary investigation. You and Romero better roll on it.
Right, Mac, right away.
I've already notified Romero. He's on his way over to pick you up now.
Okay, I'll be ready.
Keep me informed, then.
Right, Mac, bye.
You have to go back to work, Joseph?
Yeah, where'd you put my flashlight, do you remember?
It's right here in the desk.
Okay, thank you.
What is it, son, an accident?
Yeah, bad one, it sounds like. Hit and run.
Who was it, did they say?
A couple of elderly women struck down up on Las Feliz.
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah, Ma, they're all terrible. 10 minutes after I hung up the phone, Ben arrived, and at 8:10 p.m. we got to the intersection of Los Feliz Boulevard and Commonwealth Avenue. The bodies of the 2 victims had been removed and taken to the Georgia Street Receiving Hospital. One of the uniformed officers was taking photographs of the scene. His partner was picking up particles of glass and all physical evidence left by the hit-and-run driver. He identified himself as Officer E.W. Hyde, Unit 61T.
Few pieces of the headlight lens and the chrome ring about all.
And this is the point of impact, huh?
Yeah, that's right. It's 24 feet south of the northerly pavement and about 12 feet east of the westerly curb line.
Right in the crosswalk up there, huh?
Yeah.
And freshly painted, the driver couldn't miss seeing it, could he?
Yeah, it's well illuminated, good street lighting up here.
Hyde, were the signals in operation?
No, they weren't. Boulevard stopped here, though. Blinkers are all in operation.
How far were the bodies of the victims thrown?
Body number 1 was thrown 70 feet. Body number 2 was knocked 38 feet in the southwest direction. Both came to rest approximately at the center line of the street.
Mm. Whoever did it was going at a high rate of speed.
That's what we figured. I told you there were no skid marks, didn't I?
Yeah, you did.
Any witnesses?
Yeah, there's 3, but only 1 I think will be helpful.
What's the name and address?
He's right over there on the curb now. Name's Richard Morrigan. Runs the nursery there.
Well, thanks, Hyde. You're going to make the reports and book the evidence, are you?
Yeah, I'll take care of it. That's Morrigan over there in the tan overalls.
All right. Thanks a lot, Hyde.
Okay.
Your name, Richard Morrigan, is that right, sir?
Yeah, that's right.
police officers, Mr. Morgan. This is Sergeant Romero.
How are you?
Hi, sir.
My name's Friday. We're out of accident investigation. I'd like to talk to you about the accident that just happened here.
Sure was a bad one. Hope you catch those kids. Didn't even slow down.
I understand you witnessed the accident. Wonder if you'd be kind enough to tell us what you saw.
I was just closing up my nursery here. Just unlocked my car and was about to get in when I saw this car come shooting up Los Feliz there. Fast clip.
Where were the two women?
They were just stepping off the curb under the crosswalk over there. I could tell they didn't see the car. I yelled, honked my horn. Guess I wasn't quick enough. It was just awful.
Go on, Mr. Morgan.
Well, the way that car hit those women looked to me like he knocked them 50 feet at least. Then, just like nothing at all, the car raced right on through the intersection on down Los Feliz, that way.
Mm-hmm. Did you get a look at the driver?
No, sir. Not too good, but I believe he had blonde hair. Looked to me like he was alone in the car.
Mm-hmm. Anything more about him?
Looked like a young kid to me. I'll bet on that. He was a young, blonde kid, about 18, 19, on in there.
Now, how about the car he was driving? Can you help us out there, sir?
I believe it was a Ford. I don't know what year. Yeah, a Ford sedan, two-door.
What color was it?
Black, dark blue. I'd say black.
Mm-hmm. Did you happen to get the license number, sir?
No, sir. Everything happened so fast, I guess I was kind of stunned for a minute. You know how you'd be. Sorry, wish I did.
I mean, you're pretty sure about the car, Mr. Mortigan. Are you familiar enough with cars to be positive it was a Ford?
Yeah, I think I am.
And you don't know what year the car was?
No, sir. Sorry, I don't. Just know it was a Ford sedan.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Morgan. We may have to check back with you later.
Anytime. I'd rather do whatever I can to help you get that driver.
How can we get a hold of you, Mr. Morgan?
Well, I'm right here all times. Morgan Nurseries. 4402. Oh,
thank you very much.
Those two old women, they didn't have a chance the minute they stepped off the curb. Crazy kid didn't even stop to see if he could help him.
Yes, sir, we know.
Didn't see him. Maybe it was for
him. Before we left the scene of the accident, we interviewed the other two. They could add nothing to Richard's investigation disclosed. Victim number one was victim number two was identified as Elizabeth Ann Carey, age 65. Ben and I drove over to the Hollywood station where we met Officer Hyde, who was just completing his reports and was booking the physical evidence found at the scene of the accident. Included in the evidence were the top coats worn by the victims at the time they were struck down. All this was turned over to Lieutenant Lee Jones in the crime lab. Ben and I compiled the small amount of information that we had, the physical scene, and the scanned information that the witnesses were able to give us. Not enough for us to attempt to identify the driver of the hit-and-run car. Well, it wasn't much to go on. P.M., we got a call from his investigation and wanted to see us right away.
We haven't got much of almost anything. First off, your witness out there, what was his name?
Morgan.
Yeah, well, Morgan is right. The car was black. And a microscopic analysis on scrapings found on the victim's coats.
Yeah.
I'd say a black car, previously painted tan or sand color under the black. That was one of the things he's positive about. How about the make and the models? Anything there? Is that too much there? I think maybe I can help you there, too.
That's a break, isn't it?
Let's see. Just got back from the lighthouse. Ran a lens meter test on those pieces of broken headlight lens, and the diopter reading shows that that particular type lens was made in 1934.
Well, how about the make of the car, Lee?
The only company that used this type of lens was the Ford Motor Company.
Pretty positive about it?
Ran a spectrographic test on the chemical composition of the glass in the lens. Checks out.
Huh? And got a car to work on.
That's it. 1934 Ford Black.
Well, thanks a lot, Lee.
It's all right. When you find the car, I can tie it in definitely for you.
Well, that's fine.
Oh, excuse me. Crime Lab, Jones. They're right here, Mac. Just a minute. To either one of you, it's McDermott.
I'll take it, Jim.
Okay.
Yeah, Max Romero. Oh, Wayne. Yeah, me too. Yeah, right. Mac just got word from Georgia Street.
Yeah.
Both victims. They just died.
With the death of the two victims, what had only been a hit-and-run felony had now become a case of manslaughter, two counts. Ben and I went back to the office and met with Lieutenant McDierman. Past experience has proven to the traffic officer that the quickest and surest way to a successful prosecution of a hit-and-run case is with the full cooperation of the average citizen. A hit-and-run felony differs from the ordinary police case in that the investigating officers are not dealing with a criminal suspect. In a case of this nature, the guilty party could well be the outstanding citizen of his community. In all probability, he had no motive for a crime, only motive in running from the scene of the accident. Well, the one way to gain citizen cooperation was to acquaint him with all the details of the accident, any and all information that we had or would obtain as the case worked towards solution. 10:15 p.m., Saturday, September 5th. In addition to the emergency broadcast put out at the time of the accident, supplemental broadcasts and APBs were sent out. Ben and I then started to make up a special police bulletin.
Wanted for manslaughter and hit-and-run felony.
Okay. Information regarding identity of occupant of following hit-and-run vehicle. Regarding identity of occupant.
Yeah. Vehicle, okay.
Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Involved in accident resulting in death of two female pedestrians.
Accident occurred September 5th. Approximately what time, Joe?
7:30 p.m.
Right. On Los Feliz Boulevard at intersection of Commonwealth Avenue.
Okay. Now, can I see what we got?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Occupant, young male, Caucasian, approximately 18 to 19 years of age. Vehicle, 1934 Ford sedan. Black with tan undercoat, driven by male occupant. This car will have extensive damage to front end. Facsimile photographs of type of car wanted appear on this bulletin.
Got the photos right here. Side, front, and back view.
Okay, this ought to do it. Let's get it down to the printing bureau right away, huh?
Yeah. Auto paint shops, wrecking yards, garages, repair stations, used car lots, insurance company.
The daily papers are running a spread on it in the next edition.
That ought to cover it.
Yeah, it's all there if it gets to the right person. Wednesday, September 9th, 10:45 a.m. The inquest of the two hit-and-run victims was held, and the jury returned a quick verdict of manslaughter, two counts, naming a John Doe as guilty. For the next 3 weeks, we received numerous phone calls concerning the black Ford sedan. All leads were checked out and failed to materialize. Cars fitting the description of the wanted vehicle were constantly being stopped and the occupants questioned. We got nowhere. Ben and I followed up on our bulletins. We checked various garages and paint shops. Used car lots were checked and rechecked. No luck. Monday, October 3rd, 2:30 p.m. We were on our way back to the office after having canvassed several wrecking yards and repair stations.
I never knew they made so many black 34 Ford here. I don't see how we could have overlooked anything, you?
No, I don't. Something ought to break on this thing soon.
If we just had a little more to go on, that license number, somebody could have seen it.
Yeah, that'd help, wouldn't it?
Mm.
I'll get it. Traffic, Friday.
Hello, my name's Dan Provost. I run a used car lot in Dan's Corner at 5473 6th Avenue.
Yes, sir?
I'd like to talk to somebody regarding that last bulletin you sent out September 7th this year.
Well, I think maybe I can help you, sir.
That 34 Ford you're looking for on that hit-and-run thing?
Yeah, that's right.
Young kid, blonde, says he's got some repair work for us.
Yeah?
I got one of my mechanics stalling him now.
What's the car look like, Mr. Provost?
Like the one you're looking for. The reason I called is because he says he banged up the front end. Right away, I remember the bulletin.
All right, sir, see if you can hold him there, will you? We'll be right over.
I'll do my best.
We'll be right there, sir.
I think I've got your man for you.
It took us to get to 50 Dan's Corner. We crossed over the gravel-covered lot to the rear where we found it.
Yes, sir, that's right. I'm sorry, I did my best, but I couldn't hold him here without making him suspicious, but I'm sure he'll be back.
How do you know?
You see, he bought this car from us, says he had a little accident and wanted us to fix it up for him. I told him we would if he'd bring it in.
Why do you think he left? It's only been about 15 minutes since you called us downtown.
Well, he might have heard me talking to you.
Well, if he did and he's our man, I doubt very much if he'll be back.
I bet he will. Blonde kid, about 19 years old, driving a black 34 Ford, just like the one you're after.
Well, can you give us his name and the license number of the car?
Sure, it's Curly Watson. License number, I got it right here. 9R9707. I looked it up on his contract.
And this name, Curly, you have his full name?
Sorry, I guess I'm a little excited. It's Wilfred E. Watson. Everybody around here calls him Curly. I'm pretty sure he's the one you want. I know that car. I bought it from us about 5 months ago.
Well, it's just too bad you couldn't have detained him just a little longer, Mr. Provost.
Well, like I say, you don't have to worry. He'll be back.
What makes you so sure?
From the way he described the damage to us, I'd say he's got about $75 to $100 worth of work on that front end.
Yeah?
I know he's the man you want. I'm going to be in trouble if he's not.
What do you mean?
Well, it was the only thing I could do on the spur of the moment like that.
Yeah.
That's how I know for sure he'll be back here.
Well, how's that?
I told him I'd fix his car free.
Thank you.
called Lieutenant McDiarmid and filled him in. He sent Sergeants Kilpatrick and McClendon out to relieve Ben and me and to maintain a stakeout on Dan's Corner, the used car lot, in the event the suspect should return. We went back downtown to R&I. Wilfred E. Watson had a record and was wanted by the Fresno Police Department, where he had jumped bail. The charge was grand theft. We took Watson's mugshot back to the used car lot, where he was positively identified by Dan Provost. Ben and I went to his last known address. The landlady told us that Watson had moved approximately a month ago and had not left a forwarding address. From his mama sheet, we obtained a list of his friends and associates. All efforts to locate him failed. The stakeout continued. We showed the mugshot to Richard Mortigan, the one good witness to the accident. He said he could not identify Watson as he did not get too good a look at him, but he stated that there was a possibility that he could be the man. A week went by. The whereabouts of the suspect was still unknown. Tuesday, October 10th, Ben and I were out running down a lead on Watson when we received a call to return to the office. Lieutenant McDiarmid met us as we got there.
I put that call in for you.
Anything doing there?
I got a lead. I don't know how good it'll be, but we ought to check it out right away.
Well, what do you got?
We just received a call from the Santa Monica PD.
Mrs.
Agnes Hastings called in and gave him a little something.
Yeah?
As I say, maybe there's nothing in it, but see what you think.
All right.
The Hastings woman stopped in at a local soda fountain down there. The place is patronized by the hot rod crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Said she overheard part of a conversation between a couple of the kids.
Yeah?
This one dark-haired boy was sitting at the counter when another kid walked in the front door. The kid that came in had red hair. The dark-haired kid said, "Hi, Red," and the redhead sat down by him.
Yeah.
And one of the kids made some remark about the boy's red hair, asked him why he dyed it. The redhead said, "Well, they're looking for a blonde, aren't they?"
Yeah. Could be a little something, huh?
Yeah, I thought so. Then the Hastings woman followed the redheaded boy outside and took the license number of his car.
Mm-hmm. Anything there?
I don't know yet. Ran it through DMV, but it's not in the file. Mark Benson's got a call into Sacramento now.
Anything new on Watson?
No, nothing yet.
Well, where can we find this Agnes Hastings, Max?
Oh, here's the address right here.
Okay, thank you.
Well, that's all she had. Said she'd been following the hit-and-run story in the papers, thought this might be worth forwarding anyway.
Yeah.
Well, just a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Traffic, McDiarmid. Oh, hi, Art. Yeah? Oh, you did, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, right. Bye. That was Art Kilpatrick. He and McClendon picked up Watson.
Yeah, anything?
They're bringing him in now. They say this Watson denies the hit and run. Jones will check his car over, then we'll know a little more.
Well, there's not much we can do till we hear from Benson on the Santa Monica thing.
Well, maybe there is.
What's that?
We got two leads. We can hope one of them's right.
While waiting for the call from Mark Benson at CHP, Ben and I drove over to the police garage on South Figueroa. Wilfred Watson's car had been impounded, and Lee Jones had made his investigation. His findings eliminated Watson's 34 Ford as being the hit-and-run car. Investigation showed that Watson's car was involved in an accident, but this was 5 days prior to the killing of the two women pedestrians. Wilfred E. Watson was booked for the Fresno authorities for prosecution on their warrant. This left only the one lead, the red-headed boy who had dyed his hair. If Agnes Hastings' observations had been correct, the fact that the boy originally had blonde hair made him a possible suspect. 11 a.m. The information from DMV came through from Sacramento. The car was registered to a Calvin L. Martin, 16 Boardwalk Lane, Santa Monica. The car was a 1939 Dodge sedan, legal the same. 16 Boardwalk Lane was a small beach house facing out on the Pacific Ocean in the town of Santa Monica. 11:26 a.m., we arrived in front of the house.
This is it, number 16.
Yeah, all right, let's go up on the porch.
Mm-hmm. I don't see anybody around. Looks like nobody's home.
Well, let's try the bell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess you're right, nobody home.
Yeah, let's check the garage, huh?
All right. Around the side, isn't it?
Yeah, it's right there.
Oh, yeah.
Padlock.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's a window around the side.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Come here, Joe.
All right.
Window's kind of dirty. I'll wipe it off a little.
Yeah, that's better, huh? Can you see anything?
take a look, Joe.
I see. Yeah. Looks like a 34 Ford to me.
Notice the left front fender?
Yeah. Pretty badly dented, isn't it?
Huh. Looks like we're home, maybe, huh?
I'd like to get a closer look.
Thanks a lot, Dad. See you back at work, huh? Sure. Okay.
Young kid got out of a car out front. Looks like a redhead from here.
Come on.
Hi. You men want something?
Police officers.
Yeah.
Do you live here?
Yes, I do. What's wrong?
What's your name?
Lewis Martin.
Who is Calvin L. Martin?
My father. Why?
Was he on a 1939 Dodge?
Yeah, that's right. Anything wrong?
Whose car is that down in the garage there?
Belongs to a friend of mine. I just let him keep it in there.
What's his name?
Jesse.
Yeah, well, Jesse what?
Jesse Armstrong.
Where does he live?
Over on Dennis Boulevard.
What's the number?
I don't know offhand.
And you let him park his car here in your garage? You don't know where he lives?
Well, I know, but I just can't think of it. I don't understand. What's wrong?
You got a key to the garage?
No, Jesse's got it.
You don't keep a key to your own garage?
No, I let Jesse keep it.
You always had red hair?
Sure. Why?
Red on top and blonde at the roots. Is that it?
I wish you'd tell me what's going on.
No, Armstrong, you tell us.
Well, watch it, Joe.
All right, all right. Let's hold it right here. I didn't do anything. Let me go.
Well, how about it, son? That's the second time you tried to run now, isn't it?
How'd you find me? Who told you?
You want to tell us about it?
I didn't mean to hit those two women. I was coming home from up in L.A. I was late and I was trying to hurry to get home. I didn't see him until it was too late.
Why didn't you stop? Why'd you run?
I was afraid. I just couldn't face it. I thought I could get away with it, I guess. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to do it.
Do you know those two old women died as a result of you running them down?
No. I didn't know they'd die.
All right, come on, son. Let's go.
I didn't really mean to do it. I'll tell everybody I'm sorry. I am sorry. That'll make a difference, won't it?
You killed two people. You figure.
The story you have just heard was true. Only the names were changed to protect the innocent. On December 17th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 81, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect, Lewis T. Martin, was found guilty of manslaughter. He was sentenced to 1 year in the county jail and was placed on probation for 5 years. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Fatima Cigarettes, best of all long cigarettes, has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles. Stay tuned for Counter Spy, next over most NBC stations.
Welcome back. You know, these are, in some ways, the hit-and-run cases tend to be some of the ones where Friday, particularly in some of the later episodes I've seen on Hit and Runs, has the hit and run as a big in some ways worse than the common criminal out there. In this case, the person who did the hit and run, you know, was truly an accident, and the guy just panicked. But in others, it's just been, you know, callous disregard in every sense of the word for human life that led to the accident. And it's kind of an amazing situation with the hit and run driver. When you get into some of the episodes later, 50s TV episode, the big hit and run, really, it's a different approach. It's a different it's a different attitude. And even in the 60s, in season 1967 Dragnet season 1, they did a hit and run show where I think the seriousness of the crime was even increasing in the amount of coverage. So it's a fascinating question, because you know, this is, you know, the people who usually get into these things, it's not that they planned it, but that they're out there, and it kind of poses a troubling, you know, some really troubling questions as to whether, you know, people would, you know, stay at the scene of an accident. And these hit and run cases, they're always somewhat disturbing and challenging, in that they're not looking for somebody who had any type of criminal intent necessarily. All right, we have some more comments. First of all, I encourage everybody cast their votes over at Podcast Alley, podcastalley.com. Great podcast. Having to make extra money by cleaning buildings in the evening. Adam's podcast makes it much smoother. Keep them coming. Thank you very much. Another one. Thanks for the podcast. Having grown up in San Francisco listening to the radio every night, I miss the family gathering together around the radio after dinner and listening to the latest radio shows, excuse me. When TV became the focus, we watched Dragnet and Broderick Crawford Highway Patrol. I look forward to your podcast on iTunes. Keep up the good work, Mark. And another one. Adam, thanks for hosting Dragnet. Love listening to the shows and enjoy your commentary. Especially this week. I found it interesting that Joe has been warning us about police paperwork for years. Look forward to next week's show. Yeah, that does remind me. I was actually watching an episode of Adam 12 from season 4, and they talked about, yeah, we just got done completing 4 hours worth of paperwork. So he didn't show it, but he gave you an idea of how much paperwork there really was involved here. Another comment. Love the show. Thanks so much for putting it on. The volume adjustment on the last episode was nice. Also, maybe I just never noticed before, but the dates were messed up in the big building. At the beginning, I believe it was Monday, February 18th, but the letters were postmarked from December 15th to March 24th. I wonder how a mistake that obvious made into the script, or am I the one that missed something? Well, I gotta tell you, just as a writer, it's easy when you're putting down dates and chronologies for things to get a little bit messed up. The key here, the one thing to understand about these letters, February 8th in the story was not actually when there was a declaration of her death. So the letters. And this story, I believe, was one that stretched over several months. There was several month period, if I'm remembering correctly, before this was actually resolved. So he continued to receive some of these letters from New York, even after that. So that is perhaps what may have been missed, is that the several months passed, and March 24th, you know, was kind of in the middle of the plot. So thank you. Thanks so much for your comments, and I encourage everybody to please cast a vote. And if you don't leave a comment, votes are still appreciated as they help us climb the Podcast Alley rankings and help the show continue to grow. Got a comment off of iTunes. Thank you. Thanks for your podcast. I work in a lab all day, and your podcasts are the only thing I look forward to. I've always been a big fan of Dragnet and Jack Webb's work. As a former cop, some episodes bring back memories, and not all good ones. Just keep them coming, Adam. Great job on the background info. Well, thank you so much, and it's always great to hear from people in law enforcement that they enjoy the program. It means we're definitely doing the work we set out to do. All right, well, we will be back next year. See, it's not that all that far away. We'll be back next year with another episode of Dragnet, and we will be starting into our third year of the show, coming up in March, I believe. So, pretty exciting stuff. So, all right, well, for now, I thank everyone so much for listening. Again, any additional emails, feel free to send them to adam@adamsweb.us. This is Adam Graham, signing off.